Hi, I'm Ryan Nagy. Welcome to another edition of Feldenkrais Podcasts. Today we have a 26-minute interview with Ruthie Alon, the creator of Bones for Life and one of Moshe Feldenkrais's original students in Israel. In this podcast, as usual, we speak to a wide variety of topics, from Ruthie's early history with Moshe Feldenkrais to the origination of her most recent creation, Bones for Life. You know, for me, this interview was a little bit different, as both Ruthie and I have video cameras attached to our computer, and this is the first time I've done a podcast where I could actually see the other person while talking, which was kind of fun. Okay, so for now, please enjoy listening to Ruthie Alon.
One of the things I want to talk to you about today is your Bones for Life. For those that don't know about Bones for Life, maybe you could give me a brief introduction or a brief synopsis of Bones for Life.
This is for strengthening the bones, but actually it's elevating the whole level of the movement intelligence of the person, the posture, the coordination.
And I noticed from the videos that I see of it, you have quite a few men taking the...
Sure. It's actually about the optimal movement, and we call it biological optimism. So people can really improve their well-being through movement. This is one thing that is overlooked sometimes.
Oh yes, very much.
You know about nutrition, about drugs, but what people can do with their own movement, which is really a major factor in life.
You were doing a lot of work in standing, I noticed, and it seemed there were some very Feldenkrais principles in there. Is that correct?
Yeah, the typical Feldenkrais principles are not done so much in standing. It's for the need of talking to the bones, because the bones' destiny is to resist gravity, to avoid collapsing the weight to gravity. And the more we challenge them in such tasks to resist gravity, they become strong, they do what they need to do better. So this is why I need to do it in the context that really talks to the withstanding of bones.
Right, because that's when they're mainly doing their weight-bearing function.
Right.
So you think of bones as being springy. Is that right? Kind of, there's some talk about flexibility of the bones, which I agree with, but I'd like to hear more about that.
And maybe not the bones themselves springy, although they also are, but the walking is springy, the walking, the use of all the joints, like in nature, like when we were children, like healthy people, when they walk quickly and can go for long distances, and just become better and better in it.
Yes.
People are sitting too much, and they are losing this this virtue. They become more frozen and slow, and the bone doesn't get the impact, the message that it is needed. So it can even deteriorate.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating topic, because I always see research about bones in the news. And people want to say, okay, does weightlifting help the bones? Does running? And it just seems like it's a common topic. Here in the U.S. anyway, osteoporosis and bone strength, a lot of research money spent on it.
Yeah, right. The osteoporosis is quite in the front of knowledge now. And usually the research is not so much about activity. It's more about different drugs that they invent here and there.
Yeah.
But the activity, if you are talking about weightlifting, it's very true. This is the direct thing that talks to the bones. But this needs to be safe and wise.
Yes.
We are doing weightlifting that doesn't look like in the gym, because we are doing it when the back is leaning on the wall, the lumbar is supported with extra padding, and we raise the weight in a trajectory, in the least resistance trajectory on the midline and with the rotation. You need to learn that. And people can really do it and improve it more and more. Safety.
I think people very often do weightlifting and running, but they get into sort of a habitual posture. So there's probably not the different force going through in sort of a wide angles like you would get in Bones for Life or Feldenkrais.
Right, right. It's about how you navigate the force through the body. But usually people do it with a concept that is, the body is like something that you need to tame and force, doing with too much trying.
Yes.
And what we suggest, and this is where Feldenkrais come to the picture, we have a way to channel the organism through different options to become more intelligent and choose the pattern that is more optimal, instead of just forcing it, forcing a final product from some authority. This is the special thing, that the quality of our movement, how we reach it, is really working.
So when did you begin to have the idea for Bones for Life?
This is about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I had a relative medical doctor in America, actually, and he asked me if Feldenkrais also relates to osteoporosis. And I answered the usual answer, and I said, no, we don't deal with specific problems. Mm-hmm. We help the organism in something that is universal. And he said, well, that's a pity, because insurance is going to spend more money and about this one item than about any other thing. So I went home and thought. I knew that the bones need power and impact and the vertical, and it is not a typical Feldenkrais laboratory thing. And I started to look for how to make impact safe and possible for everyone that is even not well organized. I have for this the special wrap, just
yes.
a cloth of 7 meter cotton, the length with the 1 meter wide, and we wrap it around the body, and it holds it together so it can perform these strong movements without injury, even for people who are not usually well organized. And it teaches them how to, it dips them into the experience of being standing in a weight-bearing safe way.
Right. I'm going to put a link to your website, because you have a lovely video of you using the cloth. I want people to see that. But tell me some more about that, because when I've seen pictures of you wearing it, but then when I saw that video, it's not just on the head. You're using it sort of as a teaching aid. People, you're using the cloth for, well, you tell me. It seems very engaging. So,
yeah. The cloth, it's a very cheap thing.
Uh-huh.
It is our main instrument. It's multi-purpose. We use it on the head to simulate and to practice the weight, the water carriers carrying weight on their heads, which is it's an amazing phenomena, because they don't have bone fracture at all, like 1% relative to the West. There was a research about it. And this is in spite of their bone density is not higher than in the West, even lower. So there are all these functional factors, the way of their using their body that guarantees from fracture, that I want to, this is my model to decipher and to teach. And we use the wrap as a knot. We make a knot and put it on the wall and stand with the back to the wall and can challenge and stimulate a very specific vertebra in the spine. And after that, you stand totally different. We make a roller from it. But mainly, we do the wrap around the body.
Mm-hmm. And because I thought that you were giving people some feedback with the wrap as they walked. So are you looking to also give some sensory feedback, as if they were lying doing an ATM? Or did I imagine that?
No, it's very good what you said. It's all based on feedback, of listening inside, sensing what is going on, so that the body can really activate its own intelligence and compare and know and orient itself and navigate to something better.
Very nice.
We have our main exercise, though, is bouncing on the heels.
Okay.
A very simple thing. You just raise the heels 1 centimeter, like half an inch, and just bump it down, shaking a little bit the body. And this shake is like on a cellular level that opens up the all the blood channels, and especially the extremities of the blood vessels. And it is invented by Russian engineer, space engineer, that was having a severe problem in his heart at the age of 50. And he heard the doctors are whispering that they don't give him 4 months to live. And he started to look around with eyes of an engineer how these doctors treat that human machine. And he found that to help the heart pump the blood, especially against gravity, he needs to bump it down, bump the body down. And this is also good for the bones. So that's what we are doing.
Very nice. Seems like everything always boils down to a Russian engineer or an Israeli movement scientist. There's something there, right? There's Feldenkrais, there's right. Bernstein. What was this gentleman's name? I'd like to look him up. Is it easy to
Mikulin,
spell?
Alexander Mikulin.
Great.
And he, by the way, he died. He played tennis at the age of 83.
Very nice. So, Ruthie, how many practitioners do you have now?
How many practitioners?
Bones for Life practitioners.
I really need to count it in 22 countries.
Mm.
Yeah, and in Italy and in United States are the most.
Okay. And you also have trainers, so you have people that separately from you, they can go out now and they can certify other Bones for Life practitioners?
Yeah, this is what makes me very happy. Uh-huh. We got to a level of teaching now the teachers to become trainers, and they can open their own schools and be independent, and I will be able to sit at home quietly and write my Bones for Life book.
Very nice. Okay, so if you stop teaching today, Bones for Life will continue.
Oh, sure.
Nice.
Yeah, I hope I put it on the map.
Yeah, well, that's quite an accomplishment in 10 years. That's.
I think I'm lucky, yes.
So I want to ask you there's one little teeny question I saw on your website, because I like what you're doing, because it's very specific. So you talk about the 90 processes and the Bones for Life protocol. But I did notice this idea of, you call it the wave pattern or proportional flexibility.
Uh-huh.
That sounds interesting.
Very good.
Yeah.
I invite my students to distinguish two main patterns of mobilization. How you move yourself in space. And you move forward horizontal by a wave. This is the economical way that the spine is serpenting. You see it more in animals than on the vertical people walking on two. And this wave is, we need to sometime to encourage this flexibility in a proportional way. Some people are too flexible in the lumbar, but in the upper they are stiff. And unless you heal the harmony of this distribution of labor, it's not working smoothly and softly and effortlessly like it could. So on one way, we need to refine the flexibility, and then we need to cultivate the axis pattern of movement. This is for anti-gravity movements. When we are jumping or just getting up from a chair, there is an instant, or climbing steps. How you align your body to forget its flexibility and so that it can really elevate you to another level in relation to gravity.
Hmm.
And this is some overlooked aspect, usually.
Yeah, I think so. I felt taller as you. I started to feel taller as you were talking to me. I wanted to stand up taller.
Wonderful.
But yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad I asked you about that. So you're talking about proportional flexibility through the spine, movement and pressure through the spine. Because this is one of the things that I hate to admit, but after 10 years of doing the Feldenkrais method, I still do get occasional back pain and strange things going on in my spine. Especially after doing the Alexander Yanai sessions. So
well,
so I need to maybe look in.
Well, I can tell you something about it. First of all, to have problems, it doesn't mean this is a failure.
Uh-huh.
If you have, people can be healthy creature if they have a problem, but they're searching, they're listening, they want to learn, they try things, and they know how to bring themselves out or get help for that. It's not that we need to be perfect in order to be healthy. But the other thing is, I tell you a secret.
Okay.
one of the first people who knew Feldenkrais in America and came to Israel and took lessons with him and then escorted him to America to start teaching in America. Sometime, he said, they couldn't get two rooms, they slept in one room. And in the middle of the night, he sees the blanket of Feldenkrais begins to raise up and there are a lot of movement going. Well, Feldenkrais invented many of his movements in bed. Bed. It's much harder to do it on the floor. And I actually, when I was teaching BPM, I was telling people, pad it. I was bringing also foams that are really supportive, friendly. And then everything is smoothly. And they get the idea. They get the relationship of coordination. They don't need to go to the extreme challenge. Like in Sparta, they were teaching the children to lie on the hard floor. To be good soldiers. So this is one of the supportive climate for learning that I believe in. Mm-hmm. Have it softer and don't do it on the too hard floor.
Okay. Well, I do all my ATM on a hardwood floor, so maybe I'll get some padding.
Yeah.
By the way, the man that you talked about, was it Will Schultz, the man that brought the...
That was Coleman Corentire. But actually, but it's true that Will Schultz heard from Ida Rolf, which he really admired, mm-hmm. that he asked her, what if sitting cross leg is right? She said, not, and this not. So he asked her, what is right? And she said, there is only one book I read that made sense for me. It is somebody called Feldenkrais. Mm-hmm. And Will Schultz admired her so much, he tried to investigate and he came to Israel to see who is Feldenkrais. And he offered him to come first time to America to teach in Esalen. This is how it all started. And that was Will Schultz.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Very nice. So yeah, maybe we should talk about a little bit of history, if that's okay. Yes. I know a little bit about your history, but not too much. So you were one of the original 13, you're one of Moshe's first students.
Yeah, one of this group, right. That was my luck.
Yeah, how did you meet him, and when did you start working with him?
I was a young mother of two children. I was teaching at that time in a kibbutz. And in the evening, I went to a group of women to do gymnastics. And this teacher of this group, he was a man. He was going to Haifa to study with Feldenkrais new ideas. And he told us about Feldenkrais. So when I came back from the kibbutz to my home in Tel Aviv, I started to look for him. And it took me for a while. And finally I found him and I came to see there was a basement of a huge house. Mm-hmm. And many people were lying on the floor like, what are they doing there? And that's how I started.
Okay, so you took ATMs with him for a while. Was this Alexander Yanai that we call that now?
Alexander Yanai, it was like 8 years before he did the training, before he decided to teach some people his individual work. And he actually invited me, and he wants the whole story.
because this is new to so many people, I think.
I was offering the new university was building in Tel Aviv, Feldenkrais ATMs. Uh-huh. We didn't call them ATMs at that time. So I went there to the interview and I got the job because everyone knew Feldenkrais. He was the private teacher of Ben Gurion. Uh-huh. Then after that, I went to Moshe to ask his permission too to teach that. There was no certification, no nothing. Uh-huh. So I came at the end of the day, uh-huh. and he was schlepping his tape recorder, a reel-to-reel tape recorder. He was recording many of his lessons, and some groups got the lesson just from the recorder. Uh-huh. And we stopped at the middle of the room, and I got all my courage, and I asked him, is it okay for you that I will go to teach in the university what you are doing? Uh-huh. And he said, huh. And I didn't know it's good or bad. And then he said, I am thinking of taking few people and teaching them my individual work, and I think you are suitable for that. So I went home and I had a job and I had a training and all my life went into another place.
Wow.
And I didn't know that the individual work is touching. It was a shock to me. I thought he was just teaching individually to adapt to a certain problem, what to do. That's, I thought it's so intelligent, we don't even demonstrate, we don't touch. And here we came and we were 13 people around the table, and he was touching a person. I was shocked and despaired, I tell you.
So 13 was probably the maximum number of people he could fit in the room, huh? He couldn't do 20 people or 30 people.
Right. He'd sit around the table. Many more people heard about it and ran after him and wanted to join. He said, no, there is no more space. Mm. The next thing was he was teaching in San Francisco 75 people. Mm-hmm. And in Amherst, 240 were on the floor.
Wow.
So he said at the beginning, I have no routines in my method except sometimes. And this is creativity.
Uh-huh. So how many years were you doing Alexander Yanai before you started this training program?
8 years. And then I continued after that too.
Wow. So, and was that weekly? How did that
every work? Week. Yeah, every week he had 3 days of lessons.
Uh-huh. So the entire day?
Times a week. Mm-hmm. No. Just 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
A lesson was 45 minutes, and there was no interval between them. People were then dressing there and coming to the mats, and the other people went out. We didn't have time to talk or anything. It was the lesson, 45 minutes.
What else can you tell me about those days? You know, I mean, so there's one day you go into a room, it's you and 13 people, and who was on the table? Was it one of his regular clients, or did one of you volunteer? Did you walk?
No. Sometimes it was a client, sometimes one of us, sometimes he himself was on the table, and we are trying things. Not so simple. Mm-hmm. I was writing a lot, what he was talking. I felt it all was above my head. It took me years to really settle into it and I begin to understand it through the self-experience. And he was he was ahead of his time. His main passion was to be acknowledged scientifically of the contribution that he made. And the world wasn't yet ready for it.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes I'm still not convinced that it's ready for it now. So, I have my theory about science is that science is a lag indicator, meaning science has to catch up, right? So here in the United States, massage got very popular, and there's massage centers everywhere, and people started to spend their money on massage, and then so the scientists said, okay, let's start doing research on massage. So in my view, the same thing will happen with the Feldenkrais method. More and more people will do it, and then more and more scientific interest will develop.
Yeah.
But that's just my theory. So,
I did a few little tests on Bones for Life with two groups that I had in Tel Aviv that were taught 4 months each, once a week, 4 hours. Once a week, 4 hours. And with a very simple instrument of light, how you call it, radio sound or something, with somebody with an instrument came to the class and measuring everyone at the first lesson and the last lesson, and there were significant improvements of bone density.
Yes.
Although I don't think that density is all that there is to it for fracture, because it's not yet even absolutely correlating fracture to density. There are people who have density and they fall and they break bones because their movement level, intelligence maybe not well enough. And there are people who have very bad density, very low, and they never fall and they never break bones.
Mm-hmm.
So it is more and more, I see, it's the functional factor that is in our hands, that it's possible to to learn it, and everyone can do something.
Yeah, that's where it gets very interesting, because if the scientists are focusing on bone density and they think that's the most important factor, then they might miss things such as self-organization. And there's sometimes science does simplify things too much by looking for too simple.
It's just easier to measure. Yeah. It's just simple to measure. How do the other things are a little bit subjective sometimes. One day they will expand their parameters. Include also that.
Sure. So, Ruth, you're on your way to a trip. You're going to do some trainings in Australia. Where are you going? It's hard to keep track of you.
I never made such a long trip. It's 4 months. Yet I will be in New Zealand, in Australia, and Japan, and back from Hawaii to United States, and then home. In some of these places, I'm doing really the trainer training stage, which is the last stage, and I'm very happy about it. In New Zealand, I'm still teaching Feldenkrais, which is an old promise that I made.
Uh-huh. And so, but you're not training the entire time. You do take breaks, right? So maybe you train a week and take a break for a week, or how does that work?
Yeah, I about half of the time I'm not teaching.
Oh, that's nice.
I think, yeah.
Well, Ruth, I'm glad you finally got a chance to catch up. You've been on my to-do list for many, many months. I get many emails and phone calls that say, when are you going to talk to Ruthie? So,
yes. Okay, it was nice talking to you.
Likewise.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that. I will see you next time. Bye-bye.